Learn Persian with Chai and Conversation, Culture, Shahnameh, The Tale of Zahak, The Serpent King, Part 3 with Dr. Sapa Shayani. Salam Safa John. Thank you for joining me in this third part of the Zahak series.
Of course. Thank you for having me. It's great to be back.
Yeah, with our ever-evolving introduction, I should probably codify that and kind of make it more standard. But here we are with part 3 and the last two sessions, if we can do a quick summary.
Yes, of course. So we talked about the reign of Jamshid, who was a marvelous king who really helped refine humanity. But at the end, towards the end of his reign, he becomes too proud. And because of his excessive pride and him forgetting the creator, he loses his divine glory to rule his Farr-e-Izadi. And so he falls from glory out of his hubris. And as a result of his fall, a king who has risen to the west of the Iranian lands by the name of Zahak Tazi comes to power. And Zahak had his own story, of course, which we talked about, where he kills his own father through the deceit and machinations of Iblis, the devil. And through a series of different tricks that the devil plays on him, he ends up growing two serpents out of his shoulders and he becomes a vile king. And because the king of the Iranians has fallen and Iran has turned into shambles, the Iranian nobility and such turn to the West, and they look to this new great king in the West, Zahak, and they welcome him into Iran as their own new king. And we left off here, where Zahak's reign of 1,000 years begins.
Yeah, so since we recorded last, there's been some parts that have really stuck with me, so I wanted to bring those up a little bit. And especially as we've been saying, I've been reading this Dick Davis translation, and just as we do in the poetry sessions where we read the translations of the poetry, and then it takes us, you know, 6 lessons to go over each individual line. I feel like this is a little bit similar, where we have this translation and there's a lot you can get out of the translations, but there's just so much that gets lost. And one of the parts is that I think that explaining kind of what happened to Jamshid and reading those lines of what he was saying was just so much richer and fuller than, I feel like, in Dick Davis's translation, as good as it is, that the fall of Jamshid was a little bit of an afterthought. He has in the last, this is one of the early chapters in his translation, is the First Kings. And it talks a lot about Jamshid and how wonderful he was. And then there's one section called the Festival of Nowruz. And kind of jammed in there is the fall of Jamshid and what happens to him. So it doesn't really go through it as fully as you did. And I feel like as I was reading the translation, I didn't really see that fall as magnificently as you explained it last time. So I thought that was pretty interesting.
I think, yeah, that's a trick of translation always, you know, especially when you're translating something as vast as the Shahnameh.
Right.
By dint of that, you kind of have to like summarize parts and stuff. And so you end up losing it. This is why I always say, it's a big ask, but you really have to learn Persian to be able to enjoy Persian poetry, because no translation ever, unless it's verbatim, can really, you know, and even then when it's verbatim, it doesn't translate well into English necessarily. And so you end up losing so much in translation. So that's why the best way to read anything is in the original. That's why learning Persian is so important, actually.
Absolutely. And actually, that's come up the past couple of days. We're recording this in February of 2026. And there's been these videos that have come out with the phrase Khak bar sarit. And it just reminds me of that. That is so hard to translate. People have been asking me, like, how do you translate Khak bar sarit? What would you say to that, Zappa? I know this is not related directly to our Shahnameh, but
do you know the actual, like, at least like pseudo history behind that phrase, like why we say that? It's because in traditional Iranian culture, and you see it actually today in February 2026 with everything that we're dealing with in Iran with everything that's happening and everyone who's mourning. You see some images of this too, but classically, traditionally, what Iranians would do at times of mourning is that they would pour dirt over their head because it's a sign of mourning, right? It's a sign of grieving. And so when you say to someone, khak bar sarat, which literally means may dirt be upon your head or dirt pour upon your head, you're wishing, this is in class, like, you know, classical Persian curse words that are super deep and super heavy. You're essentially wishing that a loved one of theirs dies.
Oh, I thought it was literally for them to get buried.
No, you're essentially saying, I hope you grieve. And that's why actually khak bar sarat, like, we've learned to use it quite jokingly a lot of times, like friends will even say it, you know, khak tu sarat or khak bar sarat. But actually what you're literally wishing upon them is you're wishing that not them, but that someone that they love dies so that they end up pouring dirt upon their own head. So it's very heavy.
Yeah. I had no idea. And yeah, the difficulty of it is it can be quite insulting. Like Hawk Bass said, it could be very, like, it's aggressive. More than just like shame on you, or it's aggressive, but you can also say it to your kid. So yeah, there's not a lot of English equivalents that you could do that with.
Yeah. Persian curse words tend to be very heavy, I think, you know, even like the equivalent of shut up, you know, we always talk about this, is khafesho, which is like choked to death, essentially, right?
Yes. So,
it's a lot. They're heavy. It's
hard to translate, but yeah, going back to the Shahnameh, a lot of these things are very difficult to translate. So like you said, you can't get the full depth. I mean, with a phrase like Khak Bar Sarat, we could say it literally, but it just doesn't work. No, you have to know. Definitely. Yeah, you have to know both the cultural history and the meanings of the words.
Exactly.
But the other couple of things that I wanted to point out that have really stuck with me since we last recorded are the fact that Zahak initially was like eating vegetables and then through time became a meat eater. And that actually comes up later with Rustam as well. He goes and he like is hunting animals and just eating meat. So I'm seeing that this is continued through the story of the Shahnameh of like these meat eaters.
Yeah,
so that's been really interesting for me to think about and tell people about. And also the last thing that I want people to keep in mind through this is the kind of banality of evil that we talk about often, of the fact that he was not the one to kill his father, but instead he stood by as it happened. And just keeping in mind with, again, world events that are happening right now, like how much of evil is a direct cause of like someone doing it themselves and other caused by just standing by as evil is being done in your name.
Yeah, or not speaking up because you kind of benefit from it.
Ah, there you go. That's even, one more layer. So, okay, thank you for the last lessons, and I'm super excited to get into what we have now.
All right, so let us begin. So this section, we begin with the reign of Zahak, which in itself is 1,000 years. And I'm going to read what Ferdowsi says right at the very beginning. Ferdowsi writes, چو زحاک بر تخت شد شهریار بر او سالیان انجمن شد هزار سراسر زمانه بدو گشت باز برآمد بر این روزگاری دراز نهان گشت کردار فرزانگان پراگنده شد کام دیوانگان هنر خار شد جادویی ارجمند نهان راستی آشکارا گزند شده بر بدی دست دیوان دراز به نیکی نبودی سخن جز براز. So right off the bat he tells us when Zahak becomes king, when he becomes Shahriyar, his years of rule extend to 1,000. سراسر زمانه بدو گشت باز, the all of time, the entirety of time turned towards his desires and his liking. برآمد بر این روزگاری دراز, and the days became long through this experience. نهان گشت کردار فرزانگان, the deeds of the wise men, the فرزانگان, became hidden. So wisdom and goodness becomes hidden. پراکنده شد کام دیوانگان and the desire of the دیوانگان of those who are in the likeness of the demons, meaning the evil ones in this case, becomes spread out, you know? So the actions of the demon-like were spread throughout the lands. هنر خار شد جادویی ارجمند. So virtue, because هنر in classical Persian means virtue, actually, and not art, which it means in modern-day Persian. So virtue becomes abject, and jadui and magic, black magic, becomes exalted. And this is something that's very important to Zahawk's tale, is that Zahawk, because of his dealings with the devil, has access to black magic. This is an important part of Zahawk's role. Nehan rasti ashkara gazand. Truthfulness, rasti, becomes hidden, and gazand, harm, becomes manifest throughout the world. Shode barbadi dast divan deraz. In evil, the hands of the demons was extended, meaning they gained more power towards it. Beniki nabudi sakhon juz beraz. And in goodness, there was no speech, no mention of goodness, except in secret, in hidden beraz. Do pakize az khane jamshid. برون آوریدند لرزان چو بید. Now this is an interesting part of the story. So two pure ones out of the house of Jamshid, they brought out shivering like the weeping willow. Now these are the two main female characters of this tale, yeah? که جمشید را هر دو خواهر بودند سر بانوان را چو افسر بودند. They were two, both of them were Jamshid's sisters, and they were the head of the ladies of the house, like the crown upon the king's head. ز پوشیده رویان یکی شهرناز دگر پاک دامن به نام ارنواز. So one was the پوشیده رویان from the women, from the those who came out of the women's quarters. One was شهرناز. And the other was the chaste Arnavaz. So these are the two sisters, sister wives of Jamshid, who were two of the most important female figures of this tale. به ایوان زحاک بردندشان بدان اژدها فش سپردندشان. So they take them to the palace of Zahak, and they entrust them into the hands of that اژدها فش, of that serpent-like, serpent-natured or dragon-natured one. بپروردشان از ره جادوی بیاموختشان کجی و بدخوی. So he trains them in the path of black magic, and he teaches them all that is crooked and ill-natured.
ندانست خود جز بداموختن جز از کشتن و غارت و سوختن.
For he, for Zahawk himself, knew nothing save ill-naturedness, ill-teaching. He knew nothing except for kushtan, killing, غارت, pillaging, and سوختن, and burning. So in this scene, we have the two queens of the Iranian land being taken into Zahawk's quarters, and being essentially brainwashed by Zahawk, being taught black magic and being taught to do evil as their modus operandi, essentially. Mm-hmm. And they are taken into Zahawk's quarter and turned into his wives, essentially.
So what were the general rules of, like, courtship and monogamy and all that kind of stuff? Was there monogamy at the time, or were they just, like, were these people all sleeping together, or what was going on?
I mean, there's no, I wouldn't say there's monogamy. I mean, the kings had, they had harems, essentially. So they had multiple wives. Yeah.
Okay. And they were having children with, like, multiple people too, right?
Yeah. They were having children with the multiple wives. Yeah. And of course, you have different status of wives too. But yeah, they have multiple wives.
And then I noticed the word divane in there. Is that what that means? It means like a div? I've never put that together.
Yeah. Divane means demon-like.
That's a very common Persian word. I thought it meant like crazy. So like you're like, divunasti, are you crazy? But I guess you're asking, are you a demon?
But I mean, yeah, you're right. I mean, it does mean crazy in modern Persian, but traditionally, I mean, the word actually comes from demon-like, right? It's and the suffix on it, which makes sense. One who is crazy has become demon-like, right?
Wow, so interesting. Okay.
Yeah. So from here, we enter this part of the story where Zahak has to be fed the brains of two Iranian youth every day in order to follow the commands of the devil, essentially. Because remember the devil, and we covered this in the last story, Iblis, when he appears to him in his last manifestation as a sage physician, he says to him, I guess, you know, you can't really cut these snakes off because they try cutting them off and they keep regrowing. And he says, I guess the best thing to do is to feed them the brain of a youth each once a day so that they, you know, maybe that way they'll die.
And specifically an Iranian youth.
Well, the specifics of it becoming an Iranian youth become, I think, once Zahak becomes the king of Iran, Zami.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay.
From my understanding, it starts from before, even in when he's in the Arabian lands. But then once he comes to Iran, it becomes the brains of an Iranian youth. Yes. Okay. Yes, specifically. So every day, two Iranian youth are being killed and their brains are being fed to each of these snakes. And this obviously is something that's devastating to the Iranian people. And as a result of it, Ferdowsi tells us that two wise men in Iran by the name of Armail and Garmail, they're two brothers, they dress as chefs, essentially, introduce themselves as chefs to the court of Zahak and make their way into the court and start working in the kitchen. And as a result, to be able to save an Iranian youth at least once a day, what they do is that they'll take the two Iranian youth that the soldiers have captured for Zahak's feeding, and they will secretly let one go. And the other one that they kill, they mix his brain with the brains of sheep. And they end up feeding this mixture of human sheep brain to the two snakes of Zahak. And Ferdowsi tells us that once there's a large number of these youth that have been salvaged, they tell them to escape to the mountains where they can never be reached again. And so this band of young men escapes to the mountains, and Ferdowsi tells us that this is then the start of the Kurdish people, actually. Yeah. This is where the origins of our Kurdish brothers, because, you know, Iranians and Kurds are brothers. They come from the same root. So, you know, they begin. And so it's a sweet tale. What's interesting is that in Kurdish lore, from my understanding, and I'm no specialist in this, but from my understanding, in Kurdish lore, Kaveh is actually Kurdish, and who we're going, this character that we're going to get to in a bit. And Kaveh arises from amongst the Kurdish people to defeat an evil king. In Ferdowsi's version, he doesn't mention Kaveh's Kurdish origins, but he mentions that these people who are sent to the mountains, essentially, become the ancestors of our Kurdish brethren. It's a beautiful part of the story.
Yeah, I like that.
So they end up feeding these brains to Zahak twice a day, now a mixture of sheep and human. And Zahak is satiated in this way for the time being. But one night, as he is sleeping in the harem, he has a dream. And this dream comes to him when there's 40 years left to the end of his reign. And this is interesting. Ferdowsi tells us that it's 40 years to the end of his reign, because the number 40 in Iranian tradition is always a big one. As we see it, the way we see it manifested today, mostly in Iranian culture, is in mourning, that we commemorate the 40th anniversary of someone's death. We call it Shehadim.
I also want to point out, we also commemorate it in birth. So we have our Chelle of birth, and that's the day that you can finally, the mother and the child can come out of their home. And then we have it likewise in mourning. So I love that parallel that we have with birth and death.
And death, yeah, exactly. So it's an old Iranian concept, and it's interesting to see that it's when 40 years are left to his fall, he has this prophetic dream.
Mm-hmm.
And Ferdowsi tells us, "Chonan did kaz kach shahanshahan." So this is Zahak's dream. This is what he's seeing in his dream. "Chonan did kaz kach shahanshahan se jangi padid amadi nagahan."
دو مهتر یکی کهتر اندر میان، به بالای سرو و به فر کیان. کمر بستن و رفتن شاهوار، به چنگ اندرون گرزه ای گاوسار. دمان پیش ضحاک رفتی به جنگ، زدی بر سرش گرزه گاو رنگ.
So he sees in this dream that three cavaliers, three horsemen, come towards him, two older, one younger. And as they come towards him, one of them, specifically the younger one, is holding a mace that has a bull-shaped sort of head. And a mace is a club, essentially, right? And he's holding this mace with this bull-shaped head. And he takes the mace and strikes Zahawk with the head of the mace, the cow shape, upon the head. And this brings Zahawk to his end, essentially. And Zahawk jumps out of his sleep when he sees this, out of terror and fright, and begins screaming. And the women folk of the harem are all awakened. And Arnavaz, who he's sleeping next to in this part, in this scene, says, "My king, my lord, what is happening? What's going on?" And Zahawk says, "Oh, I've had a horrible dream. It was horrible." And Arnavaz says, "Well, tell us about it, that perchance we can help you in deciphering it and understanding what it means," and so on and so forth. "You have the whole world at your command. What could be so bad that such a dream would, you know, wake you in such terror?" And Zahawk then, listening to Arnavaz's counsel, retells what he has seen in his dream. And Arnavaz says, "This is strange. Let us gather the magi of the land and have them interpret this dream for you and see what it means." So Zahawk listens to Arnavaz and he calls all the magi to his court the next day, and he recounts this dream to the magi. And the magi are all concerned, worried as to how they should interpret this dream, because they know what the dream means, but they're all scared to tell Zahawk what it means. You know, it means you're going to die. You know,
yeah, they don't want to be the messengers.
They don't want to be the messengers because they're worried that he'll end up essentially killing the messengers. Yeah.
Yes. And at this point, so the women, we just talked about them, he's taught them black magic. So are they complicit in his court at this point?
I mean, they are essentially complicit in his court. Yeah, they have taken to him. You know, they're not against him at this point. Yeah.
Okay.
So he basically asks the magi what has happened. He tells them the dream that he's had and asks them to decipher it. All of the magi withhold their analysis, save one. As there's always one, right? Mm-hmm. And this one magi who is much more courageous than the rest, he speaks up and he says, "جهاندار پیش از تو بسیار بود که تخت مهی را سزاوار بود. فراوان غم و شادمانی شمرد، برفت و جهان دیگری را سپرد. اگر باره آهنینی به پای، سپهرت بساید نمانی به جای. کسی را بود زین سپس تخت تو، به خاک اندر آرد سر بخت تو. کجا نام او آفریدون بود، زمین را سپهر همایون بود. هنوز آن سپه بود ز مادر نزاد، نیامد گه پرسش و سرد باد. چونوز آید از مادر پرهنر، بسان درختی شود بارور. به مردی رسد برکشد سر به ما، کمر جوید و تاج و تخت و کلا. به بالا شود چون یکی سر و برز، به گردن برآرد ز پولاد گرز. زند بر سرت گرزه گاو روی، ببندد و آرد از ایوان به کو." So he tells him outright that, and I chose these lines on purpose because I really love the beginning of it. He says, "Jahandar pish az to besyar bud." He doesn't beat around the bush. He says,
sugarcoat it, no.
Yeah. "Before you, there was a ton of other rulers. Ke takht mehi ra sazavar bud, who were befitting of this grand throne. فراوان غم و شادمانی شمرد. They counted or they recounted, they experienced many sorrow and many joys. برفت و they died, جهان دیگری را سپرد and entrusted the world to the next one. اگر باره آهنینی به پای, even if you are clad in iron, سپهرت بساید, the heavens will grind you, نمانی به جای, you won't stay forever. کسی را بود زین سپس تخت تو, to another will be entrusted your throne, به خاک اندر آرد سر بخت تو, who will cause your fortune to fall unto the dust. کجا نام او آفریدون بود, for his name is آفریدون, which is a formation of فریدون, for thus his name is فریدون, زمین را سپهر همایون بود, and the ground, the earth, will become like the illustrious heavens unto him. هنوز آن سپه بود ز مادر نزاد, that grand one is still not, has still not been born to his mother. نیامد گه پرسش و سرد باد, his time, the time of asking and, you know, his time of giving answers to questions has still not been brought, has still not happened. چونو زاید از مادر پرهنر, مادر پرهنر, when his virtuous mother gives birth to him, بسان درختی شود بارور, he will become like a fruit-bearing tree. به مردی رسد برکشد سر به ماه, he will reach manhood and his head will touch the very moon, meaning he will grow so high and tall. کمر جوید و تاج و تخت و کلاه, and he will seek the paladin's belt, the crown, the throne, and the کلاه is another word for taj here, essentially, the crown. به بالا شود چون یکی سر به برز, he will become like a great cypress tree, به گردن برارد ز پولاد گرز, and upon his گردن, his neck or his shoulder, he will carry the iron mace. زند بر سرت گرزه گاوروی, he will hit upon your head this mace, this cow-headed mace, ببندد و آرد از ایوان بکوی, he'll tie you down and bring you out of the palace into the streets. So essentially, he foretells to Zahak his fall. And Ferdowsi then tells us when Zahak hears this, he falls off the throne out of his anxiety and worry. This is one of my favorite things about Zahak, is that he doesn't hide his fears. When he's scared, he doesn't. You know, he falls off the throne. He doesn't try to play grand.
Yeah.
And this is interesting, actually, to point out that this part of the story is very similar. It shows you the connection between the Indo-Aryan myths and potentially some of the even Semitic myths. Because remember, Iran and the Iranian world is influenced by the Assyrian Empire, the Babylonian Empire, and these things are mixed. So actually, who does this story remind you of slightly? Does it bring any other myths or stories, I should say, to mind?
Well, it's not his son doing it who's not born. So, because I immediately thought of like Oedipus or something, but I'm not sure.
Similar. It's the story of Moses, essentially.
Oh.
Right? It's the story of Pharaoh and Moses. It's it's in the same vein, at least, you know? So it sort of shows you, in my opinion, at least, it shows you how there's an exchange of stories, you know, and this idea of one who's not born, who is going to be born, who is going to cause your fall. And of course, in the same line of story, in the same storyline, Zahak then commands that all his men go out and try to find this unborn child, or once he is born, to kill him so that he doesn't befall this fate that they have foretold.
Which we know never works.
Which we know never works.
No. But what is the fate of this messenger?
Nothing, actually. Zahak doesn't do anything to him.
Okay.
No, doesn't do anything. No. For all his sins, he has some good stuff too, I guess. He can take the message.
Okay. Well, I think is that our stopping point? Yeah, that's a good cliffhanger of what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So is there anything that we should be thinking about before the next part of this story?
I think the thing that strikes, you know, that stands out to me from this portion of the story is that evil, although it can last a very long time, always comes to a decline. You know, the darkness, all after darkness, day always arises. So I think that's something, especially in these days, the situation of the world, to keep with us, to remember that nothing vile lasts forever.
Yeah, which is reminds me of a certain poem that we talked about together, which we can link to on the show notes of this. They're all very beautifully related. Okay, well, that's part three, and we'll be back next time with part four. خیلی ممنون صحبت جان و تا دفعه بعد.
ممنون از شما. فعلا لیلا جان. خداحافظ.